he had just time to realize that the age-long nightmares of falling and death were past, and that the morning was come, when he heard the sound again. It was an ululation over by the seashore. And now the next savage answered, and the next. The cry swept by him across the narrow end of the island, from sea to lagoon, like the cry of a flying bird. He took no time to consider, but grabbed his sharp stick and wriggled back among the ferns. Within seconds he was worming his way into the thicket, but not before he had glimpsed the legs of a savage coming towards him. The ferns were thumped and beaten, and he heard legs moving in the long grass. The savage, whoever he was, ululated twice, and the cry was repeated in both directions, and then died away. Ralph crouched still, tangled in the mid-brake, and for a time he heard nothing. At last he examined the brake itself. Certainly no one could attack him here, and moreover he had a stroke of luck. The great rock that had killed Piggy had bounded into this thicket and bounced there right in the centre, making a smashed space a few feet in extent each way. When Ralph had wriggled into this, he felt secure and clever. He sat down carefully among the smashed stems and waited for the hunt to pass. Looking up between the leaves, he caught a glimpse of something red. That must be the top of Castle Rock, distant and unmenacing. He composed himself triumphantly to hear the sounds of the hunt dying away. Yet no one made a sound. And as the minutes passed in the green shade, his feeling of triumph faded. At last he heard a voice, Jack's voice, but hushed. "Are you certain?" The savage addressed said nothing. Perhaps he made a gesture. Roger spoke. "If you're fooling us." Immediately after this there came a gasp and a squeal of pain. Ralph crouched instinctively. One of the twins was there, outside the thicket, with Jack and Roger. "You're sure he meant in there?" The twin moaned faintly, and then squealed again. "He meant he'd hide in there?"
"Yes, yes, oh!"
Silvery laughter scattered among the trees. So they knew. Ralph picked up his stick and prepared for battle. But what could they do? It would take them a week to break a path through the thicket. And anyone who wormed his way in would be helpless. He felt the point of his spear with his thumb, and grinned without amusement. Whoever tried that would be stuck squealing like a pig. They were going away back to the Tower Rock. He could hear feet moving, and then someone sniggered. There came again that high, bird-like cry that swept along the line. So some were still watching for him. But some... There was a long, breathless silence. Ralph found that he had bark in his mouth from the gnawed spear. He stood and peeped upwards to the Castle Rock. As he did so, he heard Jack's voice from the top.
"Heave! Heave! Heave!"
The red rock that he could see at the top of the cliff vanished like a curtain, and he could see figures and blue sky. A moment later the earth jolted. There was a rushing sound in the air, and the top of the thicket was cuffed as with a gigantic hand. The rock bounded on, thumping and smashing towards the beach, while a shower of broken twigs and leaves fell on him. Beyond the thicket, the tribe was cheering. Silence again. Ralph put his fingers in his mouth and bit them. There was only one other rock up there that might conceivably move. But that was half as big as a cottage, big as a car, a tank. He visualized its probable progress with agonizing clearness. That one would start slowly, drop from ledge to ledge, trundle across the neck like an outsized steamroller.
"Heave! Heave! Heave!"
Ralph put down his spear, then picked it up again. He pushed his hair back irritably, took two hasty steps across the little space, and then came back. He stood looking at the broken ends of branches. Still silence. He caught sight of the rise and fall of his diaphragm, and was surprised to see how quickly he was breathing. Just left of centre, his heartbeats were visible. He put the spear down again.
Heave! Heave! Heave!
A shrill, prolonged cheer. Something boomed up on the red rock, then the earth jumped and began to shake steadily, while the noise as steadily increased. Ralph was shot into the air, thrown down, dashed against branches. At his right hand, and only a few feet away, the whole thicket bent, and the roots screamed as they came out of the earth together. He saw something red that turned over slowly as a millwheel. Then the red thing was past, and the elephantine progress diminished towards the sea. Ralph knelt on the ploughed-up soil and waited for the earth to come back. Presently the white broken stumps, the split sticks, and the tangle of the thicket refocused. There was a kind of heavy feeling in his body, where he had watched his own pulse. Silence again. Yet not entirely so. They were whispering out there, and suddenly the branches were shaken furiously at two places on his right. The pointed end of a stick appeared. In panic, Ralph thrust his own stick through the crack and struck with all his might.
Ah!
His spear twisted a little in his hands, and then he withdrew it again.
Oh! Oh!
Someone was moaning outside, and a babble of voices rose. A fierce argument was going on, and the wounded savage kept groaning. Then, when there was silence, a single voice spoke, and Ralph decided that it was not Jax.
See? I told you. He's dangerous.
The wounded savage moaned again. What else? What next? Ralph fastened his hands round the chewed spear, and his hair fell. Someone was muttering only a few yards away towards the castle rock. He heard a savage say, "No!" in a shocked voice, and then there was suppressed laughter. He squatted back on his heels and showed his teeth at the wall of branches. He raised his spear, snarled a little, and waited. Once more the invisible group sniggered. He heard a curious trickling sound, and then a louder crepitation, as if someone were unwrapping great sheets of cellophane. A stick snapped, and he stifled a cough. Smoke was seeping through the branches in white and yellow wisps. The patch of blue sky overhead turned to the colour of a storm cloud, and then the smoke billowed round him. Someone laughed excitedly, and a voice shouted, "Smoke!" He wormed his way through the thicket towards the forest, keeping as far as possible beneath the smoke. Presently he saw open space and the green leaves of the edge of the thicket. A smallish savage was standing between him and the rest of the forest, a savage striped red and white and carrying a spear. He was coughing and smearing the paint about his eyes with the back of his hand as he tried to see through the increasing smoke. Ralph launched himself like a cat, stabbed, snarling, with the spear, and the savage doubled up. There was a shout from beyond the thicket, and then Ralph was running with the swiftness of fear through the undergrowth. He came to a pig run, followed it for perhaps 100 yards, and then swerved off. Behind him the ululation swept across the island once more, and a single voice shouted 3 times. He guessed that was the signal to advance and sped away again till his chest was like fire. Then he flung himself down under a bush and waited for a moment till his breathing steadied. He passed his tongue tentatively over his teeth and lips and heard far off the ululation of the pursuers. There were many things he could do. He could climb a tree, but that was putting all his eggs in one basket. If he were detected, they had nothing more difficult to do than wait.
If only one had time to think.
Another double cry at the same distance gave him a clue to their plan. Any savage balked in the forest would utter the double shout and hold up the line till he was free again. That way they might hope to keep the cordon unbroken right across the island. Ralph thought of the boar that had broken through them with such ease. If necessary, when the chase came too close, he could charge the cordon while it was still thin, burst through, and run back. But run back where? The cordon would turn and sweep again. Sooner or later he would have to sleep or eat, and then he would awaken with hands clawing at him, and the hunt would become a running down. What was to be done then? The tree? Burst the line like a boar? Either way, the choice was terrible. A single cry quickened his heartbeat, and leaping up, he dashed away towards the ocean side and the thick jungle, till he was hung up among creepers. He stayed there for a moment with his calves quivering. If only one could have packs, a long pause, a time to think. And there again, shrill and inevitable, was the ululation sweeping across the island. At that sound, he shied like a horse among the creepers and ran once more till he was panting. He flung himself down by some ferns. The tree? Or the charge? He mastered his breathing for a moment, wiped his mouth, and told himself to be calm. Sam Nerick was somewhere in that line and hating it. Or were they? And supposing instead of them he met the chief, or Roger, who carried death in his hands. Ralph pushed back his tangled hair and wiped the sweat out of his best eye. He spoke aloud. Think. What was the sensible thing to do? There was no piggy to talk sense. There was no solemn assembly for debate, nor dignity of the conch. Think! Most he was beginning to dread the curtain that might waver in his brain, blacking out the sense of danger, making a simpleton of him. A third idea would be to hide so well that the advancing line would pass without discovering him. He jerked his head off the ground and listened. There was another noise to attend to now, a deep, grumbling noise, as though the forest itself were angry with him, a somber noise, across which the ululations were scribbled excruciatingly, as on slate. He knew he had heard it before somewhere, but had no time to remember. Break the line. A tree. Hide and let them pass. A nearer cry stood him on his feet, and immediately he was away again, running fast among the thorns and brambles. Suddenly he blundered into the open, found himself again in that open space, and there was the fathom-wide grin of the skull, no longer ridiculing a deep blue patch of sky, but jeering up into a blanket of smoke. Then Ralph was running beneath trees with the grumble of the forest explained. They had smoked him out and set the island on fire. Hide was better than a tree, because you had a chance of breaking the line if you were discovered. Hide, then. He wondered if a pig would agree, and grimaced at nothing. Find the deepest thicket, the darkest hole on the island, and creep in. Now, as he ran, he peered about him. Bars and splashes of sunlight flitted over him, and sweat made glistening streaks on his dirty body. The cries were far now, and faint. At last he found what seemed to him the right place, though the decision was desperate. Here bushes and a wild tangle of creeper made a mat that kept out all the light of the sun. Beneath it was a space, perhaps a foot high, though it was pierced everywhere by parallel and rising stems. If you wormed into the middle of that, you would be 5 yards from the edge and hidden, unless the savage chose to lie down and look for you. And even then you would be in darkness, and if the worst happened and he saw you, then you had a chance to burst out at him, fling the whole line out of step, and double back. Cautiously, his stick trailing behind him, Ralph wormed between the rising stems. When he reached the middle of the mat, he lay and listened. The fire was a big one, and the drum roll that he had thought was left so far behind was nearer. Couldn't a fire outrun a galloping horse? He could see the sun-splashed ground over an area of perhaps 50 yards from where he lay, and as he watched, the sunlight in every patch blinked at him. This was so like the curtain that flapped in his brain that for a moment he thought the blinking was inside him. But then the patches blinked more rapidly, dulled, and went out, so that he saw that a great heaviness of smoke lay between the island and the sun. If anyone peered under the bushes and chanced to glimpse human flesh, it might be Sam Nerick, who would pretend not to see and say nothing. He laid his cheek against the chocolate-coloured earth, licked his dry lips, and closed his eyes. Under the thicket, the earth was vibrating very slightly. Or perhaps there was a sound beneath the obvious thunder of the fire and scribbled ululations that was too low to hear. Someone cried out. Ralph jerked his cheek off the earth and looked into the dulled light. They must be near now, he thought, and his chest began to thump. Hide, break the line, climb a tree, which was the best after all. The trouble was you only had one chance. Now the fire was nearer. Those volleying shots were great limbs, trunks even, bursting. The fools! The fire must be almost at the fruit trees. What would they eat tomorrow? Ralph stirred restlessly in his narrow bed. One chanced nothing. What could they do? Beat him? So what? Kill him? A stick sharpened at both ends. The cries, suddenly nearer, jerked him up. He could see a striped savage moving hastily out of a green tangle and coming towards the mat where he hid. A savage who carried a spear. Ralph gripped his fingers into the earth. Be ready now, in case. Ralph fumbled to hold his spear so that it was point foremost, and now he saw that the stick was sharpened at both ends. The savage stopped 15 yards away and uttered his cry. Perhaps he can hear my heart over the noises of the fire. Don't scream. Get ready. The savage moved forward so that you could only see him from the waist down. That was the butt of his spear. Now you could see him from the knee down. Don't scream. A herd of pigs came squealing out of the greenery behind the savage and rushed away into the forest. Birds were screaming, mice shrieking, and a little hopping thing came under the mat and cowered. 5 yards away, the savage stopped, standing right by the thicket, and cried out. Ralph drew his feet up and crouched. The stake was in his hands, the stake sharpened at both ends, the stake that vibrated so wildly, that grew long, short, light, heavy, light again. The ululation spread from shore to shore. The savage knelt down by the edge of the thicket, and there were lights flickering in the forest behind him. You could see a knee disturb the mould. Now the other. Two hands. A spear. A face. The savage peered into the obscurity beneath the thicket. You could tell that he saw light on this side and on that, but not in the middle. There. In the middle was a blob of dark, and the savage wrinkled up his face, trying to decipher the darkness. The seconds lengthened. Ralph was looking straight into the savage's eyes. Don't scream. You'll get back. Now he's seen you. He's making sure. A stick sharpened. Ralph screamed, a scream of fright and anger and desperation. His legs straightened, the screams became continuous and foaming. He shot forward, burst the thicket, was in the open screaming, snarling, bloody. He swung the stake, and the savage tumbled over. But there were others coming towards him, crying out. He swerved as a spear flew past, and then was silent, running. All at once, the lights flickering ahead of him merged together. The roar of the forest rose to thunder, and a tall bush directly in his path burst into a great fan-shaped flame. He swung to the right, running desperately fast, with the heat beating on his left side and the fire racing forward like a tide. The ululation rose behind him and spread along, a series of short, sharp cries, the sighting call. A brown figure showed up at his right and fell away. They were all running, all crying out madly. He could hear them crashing in the undergrowth, and on the left was the hot, bright thunder of the fire. He forgot his wounds, his hunger and thirst, and became fear, hopeless fear on flying feet rushing through the forest towards the open beach. Spots jumped before his eyes and turned into red circles that expanded quickly till they passed out of sight. Below him, someone's legs were getting tired, and the desperate ululation advanced like a jagged fringe of menace and was almost overhead. He stumbled over a root, and the cry that pursued him rose even higher. He saw a shelter burst into flames, and the fire flapped at his right shoulder, and there was the glitter of water. Then he was down, rolling over and over in the warm sand, crouching with arm up to ward off, trying to cry for mercy. He staggered to his feet, tensed for more terrors, and looked up at a huge peaked cap. It was a white-topped cap, and above the green shade of the peak was a crown, an anchor, gold foliage. He saw a white drill, epaulettes, a revolver, a row of gilt buttons down the front of a uniform. A naval officer stood on the sand, looking down at Ralph in wary astonishment. On the beach behind him was a cutter, her bows hauled up and held by two ratings. In the stern sheets, another rating held a submachine gun. The ululation faltered and died away. The officer looked at Ralph doubtfully for a moment, then took his hand away from the butt of the revolver. "Hello?" Squirming a little, conscious of his filthy appearance, Ralph answered shyly, "Hello." The officer nodded, as if a question had been answered. "Are there any adults, any grown-ups with you?" Dumbly, Ralph shook his head. He turned a half-pace on the sand. A semicircle of little boys, their bodies streaked with coloured clay, sharp sticks in their hands, were standing on the beach, making no noise at all. "Fun and games," said the officer. The fire reached the coconut palms by the beach and swallowed them noisily. A flame, seemingly detached, swung like an acrobat and licked up the palm heads on the platform. The sky was black. The officer grinned cheerfully at Ralph. "We saw your smoke. What have you been doing? Having a war or something?" Ralph nodded. The officer inspected the little scarecrow in front of him. The kid needed a bath, a haircut, a nose wipe, and a good deal of ointment. "Nobody killed, I hope. Any dead bodies?"
"Only two, and they've gone."
The officer leaned down and looked closely at Ralph. "Two? Killed?" Ralph nodded again. Behind him, the whole island was shuddering with flame. The officer knew, as a rule, when people were telling the truth. He whistled softly. Other boys were appearing now, tiny tots, some of them, brown, with the distended bellies of small savages. One of them came close to the officer and looked up.
I'm...
But there was no more to come. Percival Weems Madison sought in his head for an incantation that had faded clean away. The officer turned back to Ralph. "We'll take you off. How many of you are there?" Ralph shook his head. The officer looked past him to the group of painted boys. "Who's boss here?"
"I am,"
said Ralph loudly. A little boy, who wore the remains of an extraordinary black cap on his red hair, and who carried the remains of a pair of spectacles at his waist, started forward, then changed his mind, and stood still.
"We saw your smoke. And you don't know how many of you there are?"
"No, sir."
I should have thought, said the officer, as he visualized the search before him, I should have thought that a pack of British boys, you're all British, aren't you, would have been able to put up a better show than that. I mean, it was like that at first, said Ralph. Before things... He stopped. We were together then. The officer nodded helpfully. I know. Jolly good show. Like the Coral Island. Ralph looked at him dumbly. For a moment he had a fleeting picture of the strange glamour that had once invested the beaches. But the island was scorched up like dead wood. Simon was dead, and Jack had... The tears began to flow, and sobs shook him. He gave himself up to them now for the first time on the island, great shuddering spasms of grief that seemed to wrench his whole body. His voice rose under the black smoke before the burning wreckage of the island. And infected by that emotion, the other little boys began to shake and sob too. And in the middle of them, with filthy body, matted hair and unwiped nose, Ralph wept for the end of innocence, the darkness of man's heart, and the fall through the air of the true wise friend called Piggy. The officer, surrounded by these noises, was moved and a little embarrassed. He turned away to give them time to pull themselves together and waited, allowing his eyes to rest on the trim cruiser in the distance.